This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
First of all, how you doing? We know you live in Tampa. And how are you and how's your family?
I'm fine. Family is fine. Interesting story. So last Saturday, I got up in the morning, first thing in the morning, and obviously the storm was coming, but it wasn't projected to be there till Wednesday, Thursday. And so I put the kids in the car Saturday morning, and we drove Tampa to Atlanta because that was WWE had their Bad Blood, their premium live event up there. So we drove up to that event Saturday, got up there early afternoon, went to the event that night. You know, school was still on and everything, you know, the storm was still far enough off. So first thing Sunday morning, got in the car and drove all the way back, to Tampa. So made that drive on Saturday, made it back on Sunday. The kids had a half a day of school on Monday. Hillsborough County, they did not have school on Monday because now the storm's coming and they prep. They use all the high schools and middle schools as prepping points for shelters. And so Hillsborough didn't have school. The kids had a half a day. So when I got the kids out of the half a day, then it was like anybody that knows about evacuating down in Florida is like, don't wait till Tuesday. Don't wait till Tuesday. You know, it's going to be tough. So we decided after they got out of school about 2 o'clock on Monday afternoon to head back to Atlanta. And it was not easy getting there. The traffic was brutal going out of Tampa, but we were able to get into Atlanta Monday night. So I had made the drive Saturday. And by the way, the whole time I'm driving on Monday, I'm like, I was there yesterday. Why did you turn around and drive? So I ended up making that drive three times in 3 days.
Wow.
And now trying to make our way back to the house now, it's been very slow going because I think a lot of people that evacuated are now trying to get back to their homes. So, everything's good. We're a couple hours away. Interestingly enough, my house, that night of the storm, I have security cameras on the outside of the house, and about 12:30 at night, I clicked on the link, the app, to see, if those things came up, and they did.
Oh, wow.
So periodically throughout the night, I watched the storm on my security cameras, which was surreal. I mean, I'm watching the storm move my smoker, like move it right down these papers. It looked like
Holy
my smoker
smokes.
Was trying to make a run for it. Like, this guy uses me too much. This is my chance to run. And, moving it, it was crazy. But all that to say, with those cameras on, I never lost power. And when I go on the Tampa Electric outage map, there are, like, in my whole region, there are probably 15 homes that have power, and I'm one of them.
Oh, my goodness.
So, no, dude, wow. You have no idea. I will send you guys a picture of the outage map, and I'll earmark where my house is, and you're like, no way. And the open area to the left of my house that is showing that there's power there, it's a giant open field. So there's nobody that lives there. So while there's power there, there's power to nothing because there's nothing there.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you talk about fortunate because everybody's out of power. And there are two streets in our development that have about five or six homes on each that have power. Everybody else in the region out. Crazy.
It was so interesting. As I was watching, too, so my mother-in-law is on the Space Coast. And so, I was typing in to see what they were going to get on the other side of the state. And, I kept looking at the freeway cameras down there. And I was surprised at how there wasn't that much water on the freeway. And, you could see the painted lines. And then I found, a skate park that was near where she lives. And I was looking, and I was like, oh, you can still see the grass. So it's amazing that when you have one of these crisis situations, how much information you can get by not being there with all of these cameras up all over the place.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And that's why, like, when I clicked on that link, I never thought of those things coming on. They came on, and I'm like, wait a minute, that means I have power. And they stayed on all the night. And, you know, and it ended up, you know, that was the way that it was. Now, the problem is that there are, as you can imagine, there's still very little power. They're trying to restore power to, you know, to hospitals, government buildings, you know, all of those places, essential businesses. They're trying to get the power back to you. So no one has power. There is no gasoline to be found in the city. You can't find ice to save your life. I mean, literally to save your life. I mean, it's crazy how they don't, there's nothing down there. And so every little bit on the drive, and I'm taking back roads back to Tampa to stay off of 75, because 75 is a parking lot once you got to Gainesville. And so I was, you know, in Gainesville's probably a couple hours north of Tampa. Then you have Ocala. It was awful. It was just bad all the way down. So I got kicked off onto some side roads. And the good thing is these little communities, they have small little gas stations that are still viable.
Oh, wow.
Now, but I've heard that once you get about an hour outside of Tampa, you better make your last stop to fill up with gas. Because after that, even the little towns don't have anything. And so that's what we're going to try. Get back to Tampa as close as we can to a full tank of gas. I've got power, and then just ride it out and help friends from there.
It also looks like Tropicana Field needs a new roof.
Oh boy. I mean, and that was a staging center for first responders. I mean, that was a staging center for first responders, and they got that roof ripped right off, and those people had to scramble and get the heck out of there. I have no idea where they went. But obviously, you couldn't stay there. It's kind of crazy.
I'm still looking at the pictures of that. So, all right, were you able to watch the Guardians? Were you able to watch any baseball?
Yes, I was actually. I was actually able to watch, you know, most of their series. That was the one that I've been the most interested in. Obviously, from what I told you guys of us playing Detroit and how hot they are, you know, they've got the best record since August 10th in Major League Baseball. That you just knew it was going to be a brawl. And the way that Cleveland came back on the road yesterday and Fry hit that big home run and then the insurance run, how important was that? Boy, what a series. I cannot wait for tomorrow night to watch that game five, because this has been an excellent series. You know, clutch hitting, a lot of really good pitching, and certainly they're going to have their work cut out for them tomorrow going up against Skubal. The only thing is, as good as Terrence Skubal is, and he's, you know, the runaway winner of the Cy Young Award, they just saw him. And because he threw so well, it's always hard for a pitcher when you face a team back-to-back, because if you throw very well against them the first time, well, there's probably not a lot you're going to tweak the second time. But guess what? Those hitters on the other team know that too. So it was always dangerous going back with a very similar game plan. It's hard to veer off from what you did, because you did it so well. You executed at such a high level and pitched so well, it's hard to deviate too far from that, at least initially, because why change? You know, it's always force the hitter to make the adjustment, and then I'll make the adjustment. But I'm not going to make an unnecessary adjustment. If I'm owning you with a certain sequence of pitches, I'm going to make you adjust to me before I adjust to you. I'm just going to keep owning you with that. And so that'll be interesting to watch tomorrow night. Does Skubal go after this lineup the same way? I'm sure he'll have a few wrinkles and a few tweaks, but overall, the game plan's probably going to be pretty similar. So we'll see if Cleveland, having just seen him a few days ago, can make the necessary adjustment and, you know, maybe get a couple runs off him early. That would be the key, man. That would be the key, and then that would allow Vogt to ride his bullpen if he can get an early lead. Easier said than done against him, no question about it, but that's got to be the game plan, is to try to, you know, take his game plan, if they recognize it right off the bat that it's eerily similar to a few days ago, to try to capitalize on that and scrape across a couple of runs and then ride that bullpen to a win.
The best friend of the show, Brian Anderson, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, former Indians pitcher, current Rays color analyst. All right, B.A., when David Fry, after hitting a home run the previous at bat, laid down that bunt, you thought what?
Playoff baseball, team first. Playoff baseball, team first. I and that's what you love about it, because it's not about you. It's about doing what it takes to benefit the team. You just come off of hitting a pinch hit, two-run homer to put your team up one, and then you go to the other extreme and get the bunt down to get an extra run in. I love it, man. That is what it's all about. That is what it's all about. That's why October baseball, there's nothing like it. And when we've talked before about not everybody can play in October because of the factors, and it's the same game, but it's different. And playoff baseball is just hyper-focused. So to see him do that in his last two at-bats, homer, bunt, and he's responsible for three of the five runs, that is awesome.
What are you thinking about for then tomorrow night? How do the Guardians pull this thing off?
Well, like we said, I think that you cannot let Skubal settle in, because if that guy gets into a rhythm, you'd be lucky to score a run. I mean, he's that good. And so you've got to try to make it uncomfortable for him early. And, again, that's a lot easier said than done because of how good he is. But, again, they just saw him. They just saw him. So, you know, they've got an idea, release point, action on pitches. You know, I don't know how many times they saw him during the course of the year, but I think they've probably seen him a few other times, too, being in the same division.
You're going to laugh, so, B.A., they only saw him once during the regular season.
Okay, so as many times as the Rays did. No, actually, the Rays saw him more. The Rays saw him both trips in. Oh, man. Well, listen, they just saw him, and what he did worked. So I don't think that he's going to deviate from that too much. So, again, maybe they can scrape across a couple of runs early. If they can do that, Vogt can press the right buttons and you know, ride the bullpen as well as anybody, because that's what is so interesting about this series. Both teams have such strong bullpens, and because there is no tomorrow, well, there is a tomorrow, but there is no Sunday for either one of these teams, you're going to see Hinch and Vogt go to that bullpen. Well, maybe not Hinch. He's going to ride Skubal. But Vogt, you could imagine him going to that bullpen early and often, especially if that team, you know, Cleveland has a lead. But I think that that's the key. I think if Skubal gets into a good rhythm early, ooh, that's tough. That's tough because he's a guy that pitches not with a ton of emotion, but he shows some emotion. And if he gets into a good rhythm and he's starting to feel it, man, that's going to be tough. So you hope for, you know, to scrape across again a couple of runs in those first couple of innings. And then it just becomes a, you know, just hammer it down from there, because the Hinch is going to stick with Skubal until the last possible second. Vogt is going to go to that pen if he's got a lead as early as he can.
What do you think about in the makeup of having so many rookies in the bullpen for the Guardians? I just that's a storyline that I don't know a lot of people have talked a ton about, but it is, nationally at least, it's amazing what they've been able to do. And on top of that, you got a rookie manager.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I don't know if I told you guys this story, but after the series against Cleveland, I was, you know, going downstairs to go get on the bus and head back home, and I ran into Vogt, Steven, coming out of his press conference, and I said, and that was a game I believe that they had, what was it? No, it was when we were in Cleveland before that. But anyway, it was the getaway day, and the last game was one of those, you know, five innings from the starter, and then one, shut piece, see you later, game over. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking, I said, boy, you have a formula. And he kind of laughed. He kind of chuckled. He's like, oh, I've got a formula. He's like, these guys are unbelievable. You know, talking about Smith and what's the lefty's name? Is it Heron?
Yeah, Tim Heron.
With Smith and Heron and Gattis. And Hunter Gaddis, and then Class A, he's like, oh, I've got a formula, and it works pretty well. He goes, these kids have been absolutely amazing, and he said they all got ice water in their veins. They all want the ball in the biggest of spots. I mean, he did nothing but heap praise on his guys, which he should, but he did. He got a sly, wry little grin and was like, yeah, I've got a good system in place.
It made me laugh, B.A., because in the on the broadcast, the other Brian Anderson called him the Four Horsemen, and my mind immediately thought of you, and I started going, all right, so Class A has to be Ric Flair. So who's Arn Anderson? Who is... I just immediately started going right back to that level.
Oh, dude. So, yeah. And by the way, that bad blood up in Atlanta was off the chain. I'm telling you, the two WWE events I've gone to, SummerSlam at Cleveland Browns Stadium and that event up in Atlanta, you go in expecting it to be really good, and it becomes spectacular. They know how to put on a show. I'm going to tell you that.
Hey, did you ever cross paths with Jeff Francoeur? Did you guys play with each other on the same?
No.
He was in Kansas City for a little bit there. That's what I was
trying. Yeah, upstairs in the broadcast booth in passing, like once or twice, briefly, you know, quick hello. But that's been the extent.
Can you tell him to quit calling Brian Anderson BA? It's driving me nuts during that because I keep thinking he's going to you. It's the whole time. It drives me nuts.
Every time he drops a BA, I'm like, come on, bro. Come on. I've been watching those games, and they're such good guys. You know, Brian Anderson, the play-by-play guy, you talk about a great human. I think you guys have even had him on the show.
Yeah, he was on last
week. Times.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the best, man.
We affectionately call him. He's the other Brian Anderson when he calls in, just so you know. You got more street cred, just so you know.
I can understand that, but he is he's so accomplished. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he does the playoff baseball. He's got the Brewers. He does, you know, the high end of the NCAA tournament, NBA playoffs. I mean, he is so good at his job, and he is so easy to work with. That's the thing. That's the thing you realize in this sport. You know, I do enough national games every year. I usually get two or three of them. And every time, you know, I'll get a national game, you work with somebody different, you know, and you know, it's not always smooth. And he's a guy that makes it smooth for his analysts. And he does a great job of setting up his analysts, because at the end of the day, baseball, it's about the analyst, not the play-by-play guy. He's going to get credit for the great calls, but you better have a guy that can break it down properly and can show you things that maybe you didn't see as the fan at home, you know, kind of let you peek behind the curtain. And he does a great job of setting up his analysts so they can shine and they can show you things and tell you things and explain things that make it even more interesting. Because guess what? Baseball on TV, it's a medium where it's a visual medium. So when a guy just, comes back and tells you what you already saw, you're like, I saw that. I watched that. Now explain the significance of that to me. And sometimes you can't. Sometimes it's a fastball down the middle. There's not a whole lot to explain other than you may want to stay out of the middle of the plate with the heater with this guy. You know, there's nothing to explain there. But there are other little nuances of the game that analyst can bring to, you know, can bring to the fan at home where you go, Oh, okay, yeah, I see what he did right there. And BA, the other BA, allows his analysts that wiggle room. He does a great job of setting them up so they can show you. They can show you the shortstop that took the drop step to get a better hop, which then allowed him to, you know, get the ball on its way to first base quicker than if he tried to charge it and shoestring grab it and throw it that way. They're just different little nuances of the game that an analyst can provide the viewer that makes it really even more interesting. They can take a mundane play and make it pretty cool because of something that they notice. And BA does a great job of setting that analyst up to be able to do that if he's paying attention.
BA, you're the real BA to us. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Hope everybody's safe in your neighborhood and everything's okay back home. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, dude.
Yes, sir. Thanks, boys. Have a great weekend.
Be safe.
We'll talk to you next weekend. All right.
See you.
He is Brian Anderson. He's always nice enough to join us on Fridays. We get a little bit of a baseball breakdown. Time now for a 2020. Here's Andrew Hody. Also, tomorrow night, you've got that big Ohio State-Oregon game. And, of course, you've got the Guardians and Tigers, a decisive game number 5 to see who will play the New York Yankees next week in the ALCS. Again, he's Dan. I'm Andy. 216-474-0092. That's the number to call in. We also talked to Brian Anderson. I want to give you a heads up on that if you want to go back and listen to that. Or if you want to listen to our Joe Posnanski interview that happened at 11:20, you can always go to the Odyssey app and check it out there as well. Tim May coming up at 1 o'clock. All right, Dan, I've been dying to talk about this all day. We're kind of getting sidetracked on other stories. But do you think the Browns are on the verge of a fire sale starting next week if they don't win this week against Philadelphia?
I can't believe we're at this point. All right. No. Well, no, hang on. I'm going to be a jerk first.
Okay.
What do you consider a fire sale?
Trading off any veteran asset you may possibly have.
Okay. So like
for a draft pick.
Like Amari Cooper makes some level of sense because he's on a 1-year deal.
Okay.
Are you talking people who aren't on one-year deals? Are you talking like, I can't believe I'm going to say it. Are you talking like a Myles Garrett? Are you talking like a...
I am talking Myles Garrett. I am talking...
like a Joel Bitonio, if somebody would be interested in that. Like, are you talking that level?
I am talking Denzel Ward. I am talking Za'Darius... well, Za'Darius Smith, maybe we can get something.
Okay.
I'm talking everybody. I think the only person who you may not... I'm talking Grant Delpit. I'm talking anybody who's in the defensive backfield.
So I quick pulled up the trade deadline last year. Because the last year was the first deadline I thought we all were like, okay, trades are actually happening in the NFL and the trade deadline's worth paying attention to.
Okay.
So here are the people who got traded last year and what they got. Okay.
Okay.
Niners got traded for defensive end Chase Young. They gave up a third round pick for him. From the Commanders. Okay. The Commanders also traded.
Now, Young was also sitting out at that point. Was he playing or was he? I don't know why, but I thought he was sitting out. I could be wrong.
The question I don't have in front of me.
That's okay. Go ahead. Keep going.
I don't remember, but it was a third round pick for Chase Young.
Okay.
Montez Sweat got dealt to the Bears from the Commanders. The Commanders gave up a second round pick for Montez Sweat. So if we use that as a bar, I think Za'Darius Smith might get you like a third, maybe a fourth round pick. Because the thing with Montez Sweat is then he got re-signed in the offseason as well by the Bears. And it has been a great signing for the Bears.
Could you get a first-round pick for Myles Garrett?
Easily.
That's what I think so, too. So
easily. Especially because he signed and under a contract. Josh Dobbs got dealt with a seventh-round pick for a sixth-round pick.
Yeah, but that's not...
That was the other one. Leonard Williams got traded for a 2024 second-round pick and a 2025 fifth-round pick. So he went from the Giants to the Seattle Seahawks. So, like, this is okay. So, there's some okay stuff that's out here that actually will make an impact on this team. It's not just like, here, have a fourth. Here, have a fifth. Enjoy your time. Here's a lottery ticket. I hope you enjoy scratching it off and hopefully you win $3.
I don't know. I could end up seeing Denzel Ward playing somewhere else. I could end up Za'Darius Smith for sure. Double O, possibility there. Nick Chubb. Amari Cooper. I mean, you're going to start going after draft picks. So, I mean, just concede. Look, if you're going to be bad, be bad. Just go get the draft picks. Go after, because what are you playing for at this point? The biggest thing is you're only two games back in the AFC North. So there is hope if you can somehow some way turn this thing around, because everyone knows there's no way Deshaun Watson's going anywhere. He's not. It's too hard. No, the contract has made it too difficult.
No one will give
to
you
try a, to move him anywhere.
No one will give you a dime for him right now. You would have to eat the contract, and even if the Browns ate the contract, I don't even think anyone would give him like a sixth rounder for him. Like your options with Deshaun Watson are bench him or play him, because you can't really do anything else because he's stuck. You're stuck with him.
Unless something bad happens.
Yeah, you can't put together a roster. This is the problem with the Browns. You're in a catch-22 with Deshaun Watson. You can't put a roster together unless you have his contract, and you don't really want to play him because he's not playing all that great. It's a horrid catch-22.
All right, Spanky's on the line. He's in Cleveland. Hey, what's going on?
What's happening, man?
Yeah, hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good.
I wanted to say that I'm watching this game that this man plays. He can play.
Who?
Deshaun Watson can play, man.
Oh, Deshaun Watson. Okay.
You don't have no offensive linemen. You know, the offensive line used to be our cornerstone. Everybody used to talk about last two or three years, the Browns got one of the best offensive linemen. If you ain't got nobody blocking, you're not going to give him time to throw to the wide receivers. The wide receivers are not getting open. This man is running for his life, okay? And I don't understand. This guy named Moore that we picked up from the Jets, they need to call him no more. He ain't showed up this whole season. What's up with this guy?
That was a good line. I like that.
That was pretty good.
That was a winner. Good job, Spanky.
All right. Thank you, Spanky. I'm not going to go through the whole why people trust and why people don't trust Deshaun Watson. I could make the argument on both sides. I can. There are people that want to see Jameis Winston at least have a shot here if the offense isn't going in the right direction. They were 0 for 12 last week on third down before they finally got one at the end of the game. 0 for 12 on third down. I think the play that is really sticking in everyone's craw right now, that even if you weren't a Deshaun disciple or you were a Deshaun disciple, you might have found yourself in a situation going, why is Deshaun walking off the field with 20 seconds to go on the play clock when they know they have 12 guys out there. Kick someone off the field. Get someone off the field. And also knowing that Kevin Stefanski had an extra 5 seconds to talk to him. Still in his headset.
So the problem is with having 12 guys in the huddle?
They didn't go to the huddle. I give Deshaun credit. He didn't. That's why.
Right. If he would have went to the huddle, though, it would have been the automatic 5-yard penalty.
Correct.
So he actually, like, I can't scream at him for that, even though the optics for it are horrid.
Well, you walk right by your coach. Either there's disorganization on the field, but before you go to the huddle, you got to kick a guy off the field. To me, that doesn't make any sense. It makes zero sense at all. So if there are people still upset about that, you have every right in the world to be upset. I mean, it's not just, I know everyone wants to go out, $230 million, whatever. Everyone else is making money on that field, too. And somehow, some way, they ended up with the 12th guy on the field, like a junior high school team or a middle school team. Sorry, that was generational for some
reason. All right, I think you have to entertain it. I think you have to take the phone calls, and I think you have what's written in front of you. If they drop this week, I don't want them to lose this week. They can't lose this week because I don't want to have to go into the trade deadline.
Do you really think they're going to win this week? Do you think they're winning this week?
That's a second round pick, all right?
Now, guess what? One. Get ready for it.
I know.
Two keys and a lock coming up next. 216-474-0092. Two keys and a lock. We'll get to that next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Larry's in Cleveland. Hi, Larry.
What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. I was just saying, man, two things, man. The reason why the Browns got to get back on track, get rid of his coordinator, man. He's super trash. How can we score like 30 or 20 points every game? We score by 5 or 10. And also, the winning game.
So, wait, hang on, Larry. Are you more upset at the offensive coordinator and Ken Dorsey, or are you more upset at Kevin Stefanski, the guy that's calling the plays on Sunday?
I'm mad at the coordinator. Okay. Reason why? He sees everything up, man. I've been playing the game. I play the game. And most of all, we get authority from above. You see everything. You get the strategy, and also you get crafty, man. He ain't got no craft in his style. He's supposed to have Deshaun moving out to the right if that left tackle is loose. Man, give a tight end on him. Let that tight end hit him or something to confuse that blitz. Man, it's so many things that could – they can maneuver. It's too much talent for them to be in this situation. And most of all, we need to win. Yeah, we got to win something.
You're fired up, aren't you, Larry?
Man, you better believe it. I love the Browns, man. We get down, baby. We do the midst of the trouble. You stay connected. Stay together, man. This is how you grow, man. This is how you win. You got to lose in order to win. And when you win, keep winning. Then you get to everybody get happy again. But we got to stay consistent, man. Capacity did one thing wrong. He should never got rid of his office coordinator who gave him a back-to-back coach of the year. But we're going to win Sunday. The game going to be 27-21. Browns on the thrill.
All right, well, call back. No. Don't do quick predicts now. Call back during quick predicts. Thanks, Larry. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate you. What do you call him?
I heard Kapanski.
Kapanski?
I heard Kapanski.
So we had a Kapanski? What was the other one?
I think we've had a Kapanski previously.
No, we had a new one this week.
Well, we've had Stelansky. Stefanski. Trying to think of the other. Did I say Stemansky? I said Stemansky.
Yeah, Kapanski. There's a new one. I got to go look at my list.
We have a list somewhere.
I left my folder in the other room. Yeah. Rob's in Avon. Hi, Rob.
Rob, what name do you want to give the head coach?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Hey, I was going to say, rather than gut the entire rest of the team, I think we need to pursue the Brock Osweiler approach.
I've heard this before. Lay it out.
Personnel-wise, we virtually have the same team from last year to perform the Flacco-type offense with Winston as the surrogate. So right now, what you should be pursuing is this contract has hamstrung us, so we might as well just give away our first-year picks for, say, the next 2 or 3 years just to unload this contract and Watson, to, say, Carolina.
So you're saying give away another first-round pick for Deshaun Watson?
It's the price to get out of this box.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, this screws us for 2 years as it is. You get out of this, we get some flexibility back. We just don't have first-round picks. You unload Watson to someone who can take that contract and that cap into their cap room because someone like Carolina or someone who has tons of room and would want the picks because they're rebuilding. And we virtually have the personnel in place that we did last year to possibly revamp the offense back to what it was very functional.
I wonder how many first-round picks they'd have to give up. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. How many first-round picks and Deshaun Watson if you want to trade him?
All right.
It seems
so,
bad. I mean, you've already given it. He'd be, you know, say you had to give out two.
Okay. So if you wanted to trade Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Buckle in. It's not pretty. It's actually a little bit better. You would only end up with about 26 mil on the cap for 25 and 26, and then 17 for 27 and 8 mil for 28. So it would actually be better. The problem is you would have to convince someone to take that contract, which, good luck. I mean, I don't know if you could really attach a first-round pick and send it to somebody and go, here's $70 million cap hit. I don't know what Carolina wants to do, because David Tepper is... If you can figure out what David Tepper wants to do with that team, good luck. I got nothing.
All right. Two keys and a lock. You ready?
I could be ready.
Hang on. I think I'd rather hear from Jim right now.
All right, let's get Jim.
All right. Hey, Jim.
What's happening, Jim?
Hey, Biscuit. Hey, Hennigan. Listen.
Did you just call me Biscuit?
I was Hennigan.
Biscuit. I haven't been called that since.
Hey.
Fifth grade.
Name, right?
Fifth grade, was Biscuit,
it,
yes.
Wasn't Hennigan the made-up whiskey from Seinfeld 2 that Kramer was drinking? I think it was.
Oh, that wouldn't be bad.
I think it was.
You could be my textile guy. Anyways, listen, the Browns are heading towards a fire sale. That's what they're going to have to do. They're an expensive roster. We've talked about that. I think the interesting point is that your owner's already shown the willingness to lose. He is enamored with the Mannings. I could see them tanking for Arch Manning starting at some point this year.
I think
when they look at it, Sean DeWatson is getting it done, and I think you could move him. I think you might, if these guards get healthy, you might move one of these guards. I could see them, any of these high priced, I mean, they paid a lot of these guys a lot of money, man. And like the Conklin deal, how bad does that look? Now they're paying Conklin $18 million. The guy hasn't finished the season in like 3 years. That was a head scratcher when they did it. It's a bigger head scratcher now. So I just think the roster is—it's an old roster. It's going to have to get turned over one way or another. And if they have to take their medicine and eat it, I could see this owner who was willing to go 1-31. I could see this guy saying, "You know what? I love Arch Manning. I love Peyton Manning. What can I do to bring them in here?"
And to have them ready for the new dome,
oof,
right?
I mean, guys, I don't want that, but
I know how
Jimmy gets, and I could see him enamored with the idea of trying to entice Peyton. You're right, and exactly in time for the new stadium. I could see him saying, "Okay, you know what? We're just gonna throw this out there, and until we get the new stadium and everything else, and then it'll be like a grand rebirth." And doesn't do me any good. I'm a season ticket holder. I don't want to go down there and watch this garbage. But hey, it is what it is.
You're in Strongsville. You'll be closer to the new stadium, so you're good. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you. Let's go to Mike and Stell. Hey, Mike.
We're really entertaining Arch Manning talk now? Good golly.
I'll take Arch Manning.
Hey, good no, golly. Look, I'm going to piggyback off what that guy said. The color two back, giving away more draft picks. That's why we're in this problem. We don't have starting talent at a fixed rate because it's a draft pick. Because they gave it away for Deshaun to begin with. Now we're going to give more of them away.
You're right.
So we got to go after free agents. That guy's just nuts. You know, thank God he's not our general manager. But the guy before...
That was Barry Andrews, who was on the line before us, mm-hmm. In case you were wondering. Go ahead, yes.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's terrible. It's what we got going on now. Look, we're right. It is tank time. Denzel, I love him. It's my first jersey I got when I got new jerseys again. But I'm worried about him and another concussion. I think we should move him. I think we ought to consider moving Garrett. I know it's all about that new stadium that stinks to rebuild. These guys got 2 years, maybe. If we stink again next year, Stefanski's gone. Barry's got 2 years. He better start drafting some starting talent because he hasn't done it since he came here. He's got like 3 starters out of 25 draft picks, guys. Look it up. It's terrible. It's time to do it or it's time to go.
Mike, thank you.
If you're doing it with third and fourth and fifth round picks, it's a bit of an uphill battle, but it's also his move to get rid of the second rounders and a couple third rounders to make the moves that he's made. It's all a giant catch 22, but I'm not firing the GM and the coach. That's just silly.
Hold on to your seats. Tim May next. We'll talk to him about Ohio State, Oregon tomorrow night, followed by Kevin Stefanski's press conference. And then we will do quick predicts. You will get to pick not only the Browns and Eagles, tell us the score and give us a headline, but then we also want tomorrow's final between the Guardians and Tigers. Give us the score of that game and Sunday's headline. So you got to pay attention. That's coming up at 1:40. Stand by. More Baskin and Phelps with Dan Manigan coming up.